comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, ladies and gentlemen, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. We're here because you have a right to know, and quite frankly, because you matter. We've got something brand new. It's so brand new. Well, let me just explain. We've got a new DVD that will be completed tomorrow night. Okay, so it hasn't been completed yet. It's going to include tonight's show and tomorrow night's show. And let me tell you, both of these shows together are barn burners. Guarantee you that. And I can't tell you yet what tomorrow night's show is. You will understand when you tune in. But this DVD has both shows, and it's in video format. It's not just the recording of the audio. It's video format, so you can just pop it into your DVD player and watch. And both of these shows on one DVD. But here's the deal. It's $15 donation or more. Now, I'm not selling them, but if you make a $15 donation or more tonight, we're going to give you that DVD as a thank you gift. Now, these are not going into production. This is not something we're going to be selling. It's just a thank you gift for saying, to say thanks for supporting the show. $15 gift or more, that's it. And you get the DVD, but you have to act tonight. Now, if you make a donation to the show of $50 or more, I'm going to throw in the DVDs of Gods in the Garden, the seminar we televised, and a lot of people have been asking us to re-televise it. We're going to do that in the members area, but you can have your own on DVD if you make a donation tonight, a gift to the show of $50 or more. So for $50 or more donation to the show tonight, you get tonight's show and tomorrow night's show, two sizzlers. I guarantee you the two of them together will be something pretty much unique, something I don't think you're going to find or get on any other show. And that's not hype. You know me better than that. You know I'm not going to hype it. So you want to be sure and be tuned in tonight and tomorrow night. But also you want to be sure you get those on DVD. But this offer is for tonight only. Those who make a donation tonight of $15 or more will get the two shows tonight and tomorrow night on DVD. And then at $50 or more, I'll throw in Gods in the Garden. All right, so that you can't beat that. That is stunningly brilliant, as the British would say. It's a good deal, and they're just thank you gifts to say thanks for supporting the show. We'll be back with my guest Neil Freer right after this. Thank you. back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Neil Freer. Neil has been with us before and, by the way, has appeared on some 300 radio shows and television shows. He's got articles all over the place. Neil is a published author. You probably have read his book, Sapiens Rising, or one of his other books. If not, well, you certainly should avail yourself of that opportunity to do so. Neil, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Well, it's great to be here.
Neil,
greetings to all listeners. And is it 143 countries?
That's correct. 143 countries listening tonight via their computers, via AM radio, FM radio, all their mobile devices, internet, TV, every way you can listen to this show, we're there. And we're delighted that you're here. Neil, this book that you have written, this is not brand new. It's been out there for a little while, Sapiens Rising. But it sort of seems as though this is an opportune time. Things are happening, current events are happening, that make it an opportune time to discuss what's in this book once again. And if you would, you know, your bio says you're a futurist and a futant. What is that?
A futant is a term that good friend Timothy Leary invented back in the 60s. It's a combination of futurist and mutant, and future and mutant. And it really means he was serious about the invention of the term because he said, you know, you're one. And I said, well, okay, I know people take me as strange. What does that mean? And he said, well, it is clear to me and researchers that at any given time there is 1.5 to 2% of the population that is propped up by the genetic code, the DNA, to be the evolutionary scouts. And just as there are various functions in the beehive, whether it be the guard at the door or the worker bees or the honeybee that goes out and comes back and does a dance and says, this is the way you ought to go, that's sort of like the evolutionary scout. So that's where that term came from.
Okay, now when we use the term futurist, what are we talking about?
Well, I like to make the distinction that all futants are futurists, but not all futurists are futants. A futurist is one who tries to decipher the signs of the day and those that are on the horizon of human thought and determine both what direction we're going in now and what direction probably we should go in as best.
Okay, so basically a futurist is I guess, taking trends and extrapolating into the future with those trends, analyzing if that's really where we ought to be going, and looking at other concepts and pressing them into the future and seeing if that would be a better way. Does that describe it?
Yeah, certainly. A very good example of I feel a superior futurist is John Peterson, who runs the Arlington Institute think tank. He's the principal person there. And he invited me to come to Arlington, Virginia back a few years ago to give a presentation there, and it turned out that many in the audience were Pentagon people. And John writes a newsletter, and and I think he's one of the more perceptive and progressive futurists. If you Google him, someone who would be interested in reading his newsletter or receiving it or whatever, could just Google John Peterson or Arlington Institute, and that will give you a very good idea of one who's very proficient at his trade.
Okay, so what are some of the things that you look at as a futurist? What are some of the trends or behaviors or whatever that you look at and press into the future?
Well, I could come at it from the point of view of what are the obstacles that a futurist in this day and age is confronted with in order to determine our best goals and directions in the future. And one is the perennial conflict between the creationist and the evolutionist. I think that is a major problem, because if people believe that there is no such thing as evolution, and that we're a flawed organism, persons, flawed people, in needing a salvation, and don't stand a chance of really changing, then that is a serious problem. On the other hand, it turns out that the evolutionists usually are proponents of some form of Darwinian evolution. And that's a problem, too, because it turns out that now that we have had the opportunity over the last 150 years through the tremendous, profound work of people like Zechariah Sitchin, who has enabled us to literally restore our true history to ourselves, we see that we are evolving, but we are evolving as a special case of evolution, and it's not just the survival of the fittest type of Darwinian evolution. So as far as the future is concerned, I can only speak for myself, but I tried to look at the entire picture as a generic human rather than affiliated with any kind of philosophy or theology or that sort of thing, mm-hmm. and try to determine the essentially generic human way to go into the future.
All right. So, what would be? Let me just play the devil's advocate, and get your response then to that.
Sure.
Okay, Neil Freer, futurist. You know, if we don't do anything at all, the future's still coming. And you know, we're going to get there, and we're going to do okay. So what's all the big row about here?
Well, I think in terms of the current moment, we have reached a crisis point that could not just let us stand still, but could well lead to the serious detriment, if not the extinction of the human species. And that isn't a very pleasant thing to think about. And so the futurist thinks about how to change the current situation and improve it so that we relieve ourselves of the pressures of trying to kill each other all the time, for instance, or to use weapons and technologies that are practically lethal by their very nature, and move on to a more expanded consciousness and a more literally a more human form of civilization. So, taking the current situation, we're practically at standstill. We don't have even a consensual common definition over the planet of what a human being is. And that's a serious problem to start with. And on top of that, we have the other problem of the religious kind of, I call it Godspell, which basically shows up as the syndrome that we could call the "my God is better than your God" syndrome, and where we hold to opposite absolutes and principles with no leeway, and kill each other over if the other person often opposes our opinion. So we're in a situation that needs changing. We're at crisis point, I'm about to say. And I also will say from the positive point of view that I think I can see clearly already the view from 2100 is the subtitle of Sapiens Rising. Sapiens Rising, the view from 2100. It's kind of an arrogant title, I suppose, but nasty job, somebody's got to do it. and so the idea is that I see us moving already on a almost unconscious basis. We're not even hardly aware of it, but we're moving into a century where I'm going to stick my neck out and say that the 21st century that we're already in is going to be our for our species our century of transformation.
Okay, now you mentioned we do not have really even a definition around this world of what a human is. But now, doesn't defining what a human is limit individuality? Because what if someone out there decides they don't want to live within those boundaries? They want to live outside that boundary. So once we've defined, well, this is what a human is, then they put themselves outside those lines. They then could be treated as non-human.
That's true from a negative point of view, but I prefer to look at it as we define what a human being is, and part of that definition is that a human, by very essence and by the fact that we are reflexively self-aware and can self-evolve, that an essential part of human nature is once we're freed of the "my God is better than your God" syndromes and that kind of stuff, that the part of the essence of the human is to self-evolve. And the only rules we should make about that is that as you self-evolve, you don't do any harm to anybody else. And you allow them to self-evolve so that the visions that everybody has, slightly different for themselves and for society, are shared together and agreed upon as, just a constant expansion into the universe, into higher dimensional perception. I think we can see that already. The kids coming off the assembly line, in China particularly, they are paid attention to, and those with that show paranormal abilities. Para means above normal, okay, but now the paranormal is in some stages is becoming the norm. You know, kids that naturally can be telepathic, can be remote viewers, and that sort of thing. So all of those things are open for exploration. And hopefully, as each person expands and acquires new dimensions of perception, they will share them. And I would say that probably in 50 years, maybe that's a little bit too soon, but it won't be too long before we'll be teaching paranormal powers and encouraging them in the school as part of the educational system.
Well, that'll be quite a leap forward if we do that, because there will be, I think you know, a great deal of opposition from certain religious groups, because a lot of what we think of as paranormal, and we talk about it in terms of it being paranormal, some of the religious groups talk about it in terms of it being occult and evil and so forth.
Uh-huh.
And so some of the religious groups, not all of them, but some of them, would be very opposed to that. But let's also talk about, when we talk about moving to the future, we can talk about sort of the internal things that have to happen with humans, and those are related to the external toys we have as well. But we're seeing right now on this planet vivid evidence that the technologies that we have turned to are not sustainable over the long haul. You can't keep building nuclear reactors because they keep producing nuclear waste. And if there's an earthquake and you crack the core, it releases radiation into the atmosphere and so forth. You can't keep doing what we're doing with petroleum. Eventually, we're going to run out of petroleum. Plus, if we don't run out, we're pumping enough pollution from the petroleum fuel into the atmosphere to kill us all.
Sure.
So any way we turn, the technologies that we have turned to, with the exception perhaps of wind and water power and solar, but the two big ones, nuclear and petroleum, these are not sustainable. They're dangerous. They will kill us. And when there's a mishap with one of them, it does kill people. So there have to be changes inside of all of us in order for us to get to the point where we're willing to give up those toys. When we come back, I've got a question about that specifically and what we can do for the future. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and my guest this evening, Neil Freer. Neil, as we went to break, I was talking about this problem with nuclear energy and petroleum being used as a source for fuel. And I'm leading up to something, and here it is. It has long been rumored that there exists in our possession, in the possession of the United States government and other governments, technology that is so advanced that you don't need nuclear fuel, you don't need petroleum fuel to generate energy. Some people call it free energy. And it has long been rumored that this was developed as a result of back engineering crashed alien spacecraft. Some people chuckle at that. And yet there are a great many people who are very much in the know who don't chuckle at that. Pardon me. Now, the question, if they have this new technology and considering the precipice upon which the whole of humanity is balanced right now, isn't it anti-future and anti-humanity to not release that technology and move away from these very dangerous ways of producing energy?
Oh, absolutely. And in Sapiens Rising, in our conversation a little bit this afternoon, I mentioned that the best way to approach this whole topic is from the point of view of seeing that there are not just a single cover-up of alien technology and the alien presence, but there are three separate but very interrelated cover-ups that are all related, that apply to both, to not only the topic of energy, but bring it right down to the survival of our species. And that goes like this. Well, let me back up just a little bit and give you some background on this. There's a good friend and associate of mine, C.B. Scott Jones, former Navy intelligence, worked for Senator Pell, investigating the paranormal and the alien situation around the world back quite a ways, and worked for Lawrence Rockefeller when Lawrence was going up on the White House Hill to push on the Clintons to release the alien information and make disclosure. And he and I are same age, and we've formed a little while ago, formed a think tank called Cosmic Humanity. And our focus is on the entire planetary situation and our species becoming stellar citizens. Our basic premise is that we're being offered stellar citizenship, but we've also been given the rules. You don't take weapons into space, and if you're going to matriculate into stellar society, you're going to have to come as a united, peaceful species, not just a tribe or a nation or a civilization, but as a species. And as I mentioned before, one of the major blocks to a unified, peaceful situation among all humans is the God-fearing religions in a very literal sense. The my God is better than your God, and which is has been either directly or indirectly the cause of most of the wars that we've seen over our history. So what do we do about this? Well, I think that we have a solution now, finally, to all three of those major cover-ups. And the major cover-ups are, first of all, one that we know that started either before or at the time of Roswell, of the denial of the alien presence. And yet millions of people have reported sightings, have reported contact. We have ex-military or live military who are willing to testify before Congress that they've had actual contact with alien species and so on, so on, so on. The Disclosure Project, I'm sure you have interviewed many people, you know, on that one. Mm-hmm. And so it's taken for granted that we our planet has been visited for millions, perhaps even longer than that, of years. We've been monitored and tested and checked out. And there's a very quick story that I could interject here. That I was a keynote speaker at the International UFO Congress a year ago, and this story just to take a little stress off the us here, is about two aliens, highly advanced species, in their spacecraft, and their first visit to Earth, and they're orbiting the Earth and checking it out pretty thoroughly. And the first one says, you know, that's an extraordinarily beautiful planet, but those Earth creatures are putting weapons in their satellites. And the second one says, yes, I see that. Do you think they're an intelligent, evolving species? And the first one says, you know, I really don't think so. They have those things pointed at each other.
So, well, it's true. You know, the number one pastime of humanity throughout the history of humanity has been to kill each other.
Uh-huh. And that's because we learned that from the gods. And we'll get into that in just in a minute. But we all pretty much recognize the first major cover-up. And we often think of cover-up as far as alien species in those terms. But I'm also going to suggest that there is a major cover-up in a sense of suppression and denial and just ignoring it of the 150 years of information that has been processed out, translated, and developed by Zechariah Sitchin, who, by the way, passed away at the age of 90 before he could get a Nobel Prize, typical with that kind of thing, just a little while ago, unfortunately. Zechariah was a good friend. He wrote the introduction for my first two paper books, and we had maintained contact until he passed away. The second one is the suppression of all that information. Over the last 150 years, we have recovered from the Middle Eastern digs, particularly, and India and Central America and South America, information that we were a genetically engineered slave species by the Anunnaki. Who were the Anunnaki? Most people are beginning to become familiar with that term. Anunnaki is the name of the humanoid alien civilization from the 10th planet in our solar system, Nibiru, Planet X, in modern terms. And they colonized this planet 432,000 years ago. Well, almost 450,000 years ago now. And then they were taking huge amounts of gold out of South African gold mines. 200,000 years ago, they had rebellion in those gold mines and demanded that they be relieved of eating the dirt down there. And the lower echelons did. And so they went to work. One of them, the chief scientist, Enki, also a director of the colony planet here, and his half-sister Ninhursag, they actually, to make a very long story short, because it was quite a process, they impinged, spliced their genes onto Homo erectus, and here we are. The creationists and the evolutionists are both half right and half wrong. There was a creation, but it was in a genetic laboratory. We are evolving, but in a special case of evolution that is unique to us. And so we learn from them. Eventually, we became partners with them, and then they phased off or back. Probably close to 1200 BC at the very latest, and we've been on our own. And at that point, where Sitchin leaves off, there is another author, Sir Lawrence Gardner, who unfortunately also passed away at a much younger age, just a little while ago last year. Also, a good friend and tremendous scholar. And he wrote a series of books, Genesis of the Grail Kings, and the first book was called Bloodline of the Holy Grail, and then Genesis of the Grail Kings, and so on. And he shows quite clearly from his research, he had access to the private archives of probably 30 royal families doing genealogical work in England and Europe. And he began to discover a special line of kings that were mentioned through all these royal libraries. And he would ask them, what is this? And they would say, did you find my great-great-grandfather? And he said, no, what is this special line of kings? And they finally said, well, look, we've been kept in the woodwork all this time because we were the target of the Inquisition, but that's the Grail. That's the Grail bloodline. So he was able to trace it all the way back to Babylonia and to Sumer and to the Anunnaki, and he realized that the Old Testament translations today are skewed around because it says that Enki and the Anunnaki, realizing that they were going to phase off, wanted to create a line of enhanced, genetically enhanced humans who would be rulers according to their training as servants of the people, and to eventually take the place of the Anunnaki in charge. And so Enki picked out remember in Genesis in the Bible there are two stories of Adam and Eve. One is the actual creation of humans in the first place, and the other one is strange, where Eve goes to Adam and says, hey man, in modern jargon, I've got a kid from the Lord. And instead of getting rather perturbed that she was out with somebody else, he says, way cool. And so Gardner, going back into the original Hebrew, realized that Enki picked out selected a human female and fathered a child by her to initiate this line of kings. And the child's name was Cain. Well, the modern translations say Cain was a bad guy and killed his brother, slew his brother. The original Hebrew doesn't say that at all. The original Hebrew says Cain was superior to Abel. And that was the initiation of this line of kings, and they were trained in what we call mystery schools now, but they weren't mystery schools at all. They were high-tech schools teaching many disciplines. And so that line of kings came from Sumer through Egypt through the Essenes, and Jesus and Mary were Essenes officials, and they were married and they had children, and they've furthered this bloodline, which still exists. I've talked to Prince Michael of Albany in Scotland, who, by the way, was not allowed out of Scotland with a visa or a passport or anything for a long time.
All right, we have to pick up there when we come back. We have a break taking over. We'll be back, ladies and gentlemen, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is none other than Neil Freer. So, Neil, you were telling us as we went to break about talking with the King of Albany.
Oh, Prince Michael of Albany is at the end. He is the current representative of the Grail bloodline, and of course the Brit royals, our German, didn't have the bloodline, and they took over the throne of England, and they've kept him under wraps up until a few years ago. And I should quit there because it's not fair to try to do 6,000 years of history in a few minutes.
Okay, but so critical, what is the third cover up?
Well, the The first cover-up is, as I just said, the religious one. And the critical point to take from that on where we can find a solution to it is to realize, as Gardner's critical and meticulous scholarship has pointed out very clearly, that these two Anunnaki brothers, Anunnaki means those who came down in Sumerian, meaning from space and from their home planet, the 10th planet, which was rediscovered in 83-84 by the IRIS satellite and announced, and that's been covered up. And we'll go into that as the second cover-up here in a minute. The idea is that these two brothers, one was, it turns out, Enki was Adonai the Lord of the Old Testament, and Enlil, E-N-L-I-L, his brother, was Jehovah Yahweh. And these two, in order to make a single god out of them, the Levite priest rewriting the ancient 3,000-year earlier Sumerian records into the Old Testament Genesis, fused these two together under a plural word, Elohim. El is singular. And that's where the beginnings of the monotheistic Judeo-Christian God came from. Just before he died, Sir Lawrence Gardner published a fascinating and very definitive book called The Origin of God. Highly recommend that. Now, once we see this, that the religious, this is the nature of monotheism and the God of who the God really was, of the Judeo-Christian and Muslim, and a Christian, Hebrew, Catholic, Roman Catholic, and so on, God, then we can realize that we can break that God spell. We can realize that we are part alien by genetic creation. We can come together and get a definition of what a human being is on a generic basis, realize that what has been purported to be supernatural religion is really the extension of the ancient master-slave relationship. And we learned, as you called it, practice, the something of killing each other, making war.
Yeah, our favorite pastime.
A favorite pastime, yes. Mm-hmm. There, thank you. It slipped me for a minute. We learned it from them. And we need to get, one of the ways that we need to get past that is to move from competition to planetary cooperation. And we can do that by the use of three major technologies that we have. We have free energy, I'm sure of it. I've been told by insiders that we have it from aliens, back engineered or donation. And we have, if somebody is really interested in following up on that, there are patented free energy and over unity devices already out there in public. You can look at the website is chenier.org, chenier.org. Tom Bearden and Bedini, mm-hmm. they have developed no moving parts, free energy over unity devices. They're looking for investor, they have patented. They have U.S. patents on it. Of course, big oil doesn't necessarily like that. Mm-hmm. So the first cover-up, religion, our actual...
Well, I thought the first cover-up was denial of alien presence.
The second one is a cover-up of the home planet of the existence and the characteristics and orbits and everything of the 10th planet, Nibiru, the home planet of the Anunnaki, because we know from the ancient records and also from the discoveries of the Pioneer program and the and Harrington of the Naval Observatory. I remember you told me this afternoon that you actually have that interview between Harrington and Sitchin, where mm-hmm. they corroborate each other's information and findings. And Harrington even says that it's he's pretty sure that it's a planet with a great atmosphere that we could probably be comfortable in. And I immediately said to myself when I heard that in the early 90s, where did he get that piece of detail? Anyway, but we also know that it has this planet is Uranus-sized at least. It has a 3,600-year orbit around our sun, and it's a very narrow elliptical orbit. It goes way out from the sun and then comes in into the inner solar system, tipped up to the plane of the flat plane of the ecliptic of the other planets by about 30 degrees, whips around, slingshots around through the asteroid belt in between Mars and Jupiter at perigee in the closest part in. And when it does that, depending on where the Earth is in relationship to it and the sun, it can gravitationally and electromagnetically totally upheaval the Earth. And the story of the flood in the Old Testament was one of those passings. It doesn't always happen that way. If we're on the opposite side of the sun, we're protected. But if we're close to it, it can push up oceans. And I highly recommend a book called Cataclysm by Allan, A-L-L-A-N, and Delayer, D-E-L-A-I-R, geophysicist and cartographer from England who did tremendous research on the flood time about 9500 BC, the flood that's mentioned in the Old Testament. But in the Old Testament, it's almost like a children's story. You know, it sounds like a big tsunami somehow or other came up through the Middle East and then receded, whereas their research shows that it was a planetary-wide cataclysmic event that pushed up mountains, emptied seas, changed the entire surface of the Earth practically, and maybe humans at that particular point, abandoned by the Anunnaki, probably... there weren't any more than maybe 1,000 of us left over the entire planet by the time that thing got finished. And one thing that points up the severity of that would be the fact that at the top of Mount Everest, the highest mountain in the world, they have found embedded clamshells. And not only are there embedded clamshells there, but those clamshells are embedded closed, which means they were alive when they were embedded there. This was... a cataclysmic event that makes the current Japanese thing look like a like practically nothing, except that if it happens again, now that we have nuclear plants all over the world, those nuclear plants can get busted apart, and we've got serious problems. Which brings up leverage.
Okay, we have to step away for a break. We'll be back, ladies and gentlemen, right after this, so don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Neil Freer. Neil, I hope you remember what you were about to say when we went to break, because I don't. But the floor is yours.
I do remember saying that I'd be right here with a cup of tea, but before okay. that, when I was actually talking...
All right, I want to examine something pretty quickly, and then we need to open the phone lines and allow our audience to participate in this discussion.
Okay.
But and folks, we will open the phone lines in just a moment. Oh, by the way, welcome to those of you who are joining us just now in the second hour. I'm delighted that you're here, and I'm sorry you missed the first hour if you did, but we're delighted you're here now. We do have something special happening tonight for those who decide that they want to donate to the support of the show tonight. $15 or more, we're going to send you a CD. Actually, it's a DVD with the videos of tonight's show and tomorrow night's show. Both of these together are barn burners, I guarantee it. And then if you decide to donate $50 or more, you get that, plus I throw in God's in the Garden, the DVDs for God's in the Garden. So it's tonight only, though. So to do that, you go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, click where it says donate, and take care of it there, and we will get these to you. Now, my guest is Neil Freer. He is a published author. He is a futurist and a futant, and he is someone that is well known around the world, speaking about how to make certain changes that need to be made in order to arrive at a future that's healthy and happy and prosperous for humanity. And we are talking about this interwoven cover-up, the three strands of the cover-ups, having to do with, at some point, all of them have something to do with extraterrestrials, and we have arrived at Nibiru, or Planet X, which is really not an X, it's the Roman numeral 10, the 10th planet of the solar system. Now, along the way, you said that we have been, we are being invited to be a part of a stellar civilization, but there are rules, and, you know, we've got to meet those in order to be a part of it. So I want to ask, how do we know that we're being invited to be part of a stellar civilization?
Well, I think you have to take all the evidence of alien contact that we have gathered over quite a period of time now, and evaluate it. You may not even agree, or someone may not even agree that it is as clear cut as that. But I respectfully submit that. Take for instance the work of Phil Krauth, who wrote The Contact Has Begun, picked up by the Verdants, highly advanced species, given a whole weekend seminar, and they are telling him basically that same thing. And then put that up against the recent expose that was given at the press club in Washington, D.C., by a gentleman by the name of Sala, S-A-L-L-S-A-L-A, not Michael Sala of Exopolitics.
But yeah, Robert Sala.
Robert Sala.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the privilege and pleasure of meeting him when we both spoke at Kona at a conference. And he was the one that was specially trained to run the console in North, I believe it was North Dakota, for the missile site. I think they had 15 missiles in silos, nuclear-tipped missiles. And to make a long story short, alien civilization spacecraft flew over and turned them all off and in their silos. And mm-hmm. He said, when we were having breakfast together, he said, you know, I'm sitting there watching all the lights go out, and or the red lights go on, and not being able to do a damn thing about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, did they turn them back on, Bob? And he said, no.
They just turned them off.
But the message was... the message was quite clear. He said, you know, you kids better stop playing with those things. and we don't interfere unless it gets to the point of atomic bombs and that sort of thing. And I know that I've read a number of reports just in the last few days that many sightings of spacecraft, UFOs, around the Japanese catastrophe over there. Hopefully, maybe they'll offer some help. But the idea is, the concept here is that they don't interfere, and they're letting us, you know, make the decisions on our own. And I don't think that, you know, if they wanted to, if any of those advanced alien species that have been around here for a long time, you know, wanted to eat our lunch or us, they could have done it, and they still could do it. I think that the general overall picture is pretty clear. You know, they got patience, and if we want to meet the conditions and get accepted in stellar society, great. You know, if you don't, well, that's your choice. But you know, to recapitulate a little bit here, so that we can take some phone calls. The three cover-ups, the religious one, restores our true history to ourselves and breaks the God spell, and we can get to generic humanity and get away from the my God is better than your God favorite pastime of killing each other. And the second one is a leverage to push for disclosure that comes from fact that the 10th planet is on its way back in, and it's always a threat when it comes back through. We can't tell whether it's going to be a mild passing or whether it's going to be a cataclysmic one, and we should be told, the people should be told, disclosure should be made, and hopefully maybe within this year. I hear rumors, but that's all, that President Obama may come forth and start the ball rolling. And the third one is, of course, the whole idea of the suppression of the alien technology, where we know Ben Rich of the Skunk Works, just before he died, head of the place where they made the most advanced secret aircraft in California, said just before he died, we have technology that you can't even imagine. We could go to the stars, but God knows when those who are in charge of this stuff, either for weapons to die for or to, keep their particular industries like oil and stuff going, when they'll allow it to come out. And that should come out. We could eliminate, get past even solar and wind and water and nuclear and everything else. Free energy is there any place, and it could be given into third world countries immediately. And it will allow us to go from competition to a planetary cooperation, and which will be a major contributing factor, along with the breaking the God spell, to getting to peaceful unity among us as a species, and maybe we will not have to waste another generation of our kids. Maybe we'll be able to enter stellar society. We get to matriculate. I like that word when it comes to stellar society. Pass the test and let's get on with it. The kids deserve it. And so that's basically where C.B. Scott Jones and myself are focused. And you can see his Peace Inc., Peace Incorporated program that he's promoting at his website, which is peaceroom.com, www.peaceroom.com. And just recently, because of our focus and what we've been doing, we've been invited to India to do presentations in Pune and in Delhi for mixed audiences of military, scientists, academics. And the emphasis here is on academics because our thrust, our purpose, and our agenda is to try to get the academic world off the dime. They're frozen in space by tenure tetanus, a funding fright, or afraid of losing their funding, peer pressure, and generally intimidation to deal with things like cosmic citizenship and how to interact with aliens and so on, because we should be teaching our children by that, at least on the college level, if not the right on down to grade school level. And so we've been, it's kind of ironic, you know, we've offered to go to the White House or Congress or whatever to do presentations and testify, but it's just silence.
Well, I'm really not surprised.
To go all the way over to India to do this.
Mm-hmm. It's very, very hard. The reason I think you're getting silence out of Washington is it's very, very difficult to hear anything if you have your head inserted someplace south. Okay, let's go to the telephone lines. Folks, we're going to open the telephone lines. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. Toll-free in the United States and Canada, it is 888-223-4599. Again, the main number, 623-444-5889. If you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, I don't have a toll-free out there. So you can call our main number, 623-444-5889. Or if you're outside the USA and outside of Canada, because I don't have a toll-free number for out there, you can use the flash message option on my website at kevinsmithshow.com. All right, to the telephone. Caller, you're live. You were live. When you call, hang on. When I put you on hold, this is another thing. When I put you on hold, turn your radio down, okay? You'll be able to hear the show in your telephone. Turn your radio down, because if you try to listen on the radio, you're going to be a minimum of 30 seconds late whenever I bring you up on air. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Good evening, Kevin. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hello, Terry.
Hi.
Hi, Terry.
Very interesting. Hi there, sir. Very interesting. I'd like to ask you, way back before Ascension, you know, and supposedly Seymour or whatever you call it, what about Enoch? What was that all about prior to, I think that was even before everything else?
Well, let's see. Enoch in the Old Testament would have been quite a bit after Sumer. Sumer would have been 6,000 years ago, 40, you know, something around 4,500 B.C., and the Old Testament was not written until about 3,000 years after that. So the Book of Enoch and those that were included in there are of considerably more recent date, and even some of them would come after the Egyptian civilization, which was another 1,000 years this side of the original Sumerian civilization. We certainly couldn't go into all of the details of Enoch, but Sitchin has some pretty extensive and I think quite accurate material on it.
Yeah, I'd also like you say that the tenth planet exists, and that you know we are the aliens have created us. So for, you know, to say now that they won't interfere, they already did interfere, and now to say that they're setting back and, and don't have any responsibility or to do anything, it's kind of counterdictive, isn't it?
Yes, it would be if it were as simple as that. I think we have to distinguish here. When I say that we're being invited into stellar society, I'm talking about any number of highly advanced civilizations, not just the Anunnaki. The Anunnaki are a whole separate ballgame as far as we're concerned. We have to reconcile with them. It's very possible that the 2012 date will see the return of one of them. This is pure conjecture at my point, but I think that when you go back and you read the real history of the Mayans and the Aztecs, you see that one of the Anunnaki sons, his name was in Sumeria or Mesopotamia, his name was Ningishida, and he was known as Thoth, T-H-O-T-H, to the Egyptians. And then when he was given domain over Central and South and apparently some parts of North America, he was shipped over, he was sent over here and to develop the thing. And he was a skilled architect and engineer and everything, and that's he was known as Quetzalcoatl. And to the Greeks, he was known as Hermes. So what we have here there's a lot of people out there talking about the 2012 date as, the end of time and all that kind of stuff. Actually, I think it's a lot more practical than that. It's very possible that he may return because he said he would, because he's the one who taught the Mayans. They didn't have any telescopes or anything like that or any experience to be able to develop the advanced astronomy that they have, and he taught it all to them. So that kind of clears that one up.
On another level, let me interject something here on another level. Terry, do you have any children?
Yes.
Are they grown?
Yes.
Do you interfere in their lives?
Yes, I influence their lives.
Well, there's a difference in influence and interfere. And if they are visiting us and if they are turning off nuclear weapons, things like that, that's influencing. But to interfere would be a whole different level of engagement. My children are grown. If they ask my advice and opinion about something, they will get it, and I'm glad to do that. But they're grown. They have to live their lives now with the tools that they were provided growing up, with the exception of Derek. He's still little. He's 7, and we interfere with his life minute by minute.
Yeah. I'd go along with that, but with, let's say, 90% of the population don't know that we have other parents or can ask for other help, except for being ruled over, how, as a civilization, can we continue like that? And what does your guest think about...
I don't know. Ask him.
...the Middle East? Are we in a change and evolving to that upper stage that he's hoping for?
Okay.
That's a great question.
You'll have to
that's
keep it a little bit short, Neil, because we do have other callers that want to get in. Terry, thank you so much for the call. Go ahead, Neil.
I think Terry's question about the Middle East, I think, is really good, because I think that as we... even though we don't realize it, explicitly as a civilization or as a species, the Middle East is in a sense breaking the God spell in a political sense, because all of Western history, particularly in the rest of the planet, can be seen as those who chose to emulate Enki, who created the bloodline of rulers to take their place as servants of the people, and those who decided to, or were gravitating to emulating Enlil, who was pretty nasty-ass, quite frankly. You know, he was like, look, we made you a slave species, and don't you forget it. Keep your place. And so dominating, male-dominating thing that matures and changes over time, but ends up in things like the Roman Catholic Church, you know, the Roman clergy, where women are kind of suppressed, and in the some of the other religions that do the same thing, male dominance, whereas the bloodline had to go in the woodwork because the Roman Catholic Empire took them as competition and tried to wipe them out. Anyway,
we need to get to the next call.
The Middle East is a very good example of how we are evolving, even though we don't realize it.
Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hello, Brent.
Hi, Brent.
Hi, Kevin. Neil, how you doing?
Great.
I'm going to go back to something Jerry Wills said once on your show, Kevin.
All right.
He said that he was in an airport down in South America, I think it was Peru, I'm not sure, and he saw somebody having a heart attack. And a lot of people rushed over to help that person. When Jerry got there, the person was gone. And one of his alien contacts said that it was a test just to find out who was showing compassion. So I am thinking, this is just my speculation, a lot of the sightings we have now is that they are coming here to see who has and who has not learned compassion. Because we're coming up on something, I don't know what it is, we're coming up on something, and they're going to do everything they can to help those who are able to show compassion and have true compassion to pull through.
Are you sure?
Me?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I that's my speculation.
Oh, okay. What do you think, Neil?
I resonate with that speculation, Brent. I think that we have to take into consideration all of these clues, I guess that's the best word for it, about the exopolitics of the situation. Exopolitics, meaning the relationship between us and them, whether, and you know, if it's a species like what's his name, Jim, anyway, the one that was in
Jim
contact that was trained by little androids and then demanded to see the management, and they said, you are not going to like this. It turned out that they were total reptilians, but they and reptilians have a whole different kind of emotional relationship and reactions. Some of them are very humanoid. I shouldn't get way off here.
All right, well, we'll have to pick up there when we come back. We have a break taking over in just a few seconds. Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to The Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening is Neil Freer. When we come back from this break, we will continue taking your calls with your comments and your questions. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Neil Freer. Neil, did you want to complete that thought?
In fact, having a little tea here during the break kind of clarified my mind on that one. I said to Brent that I resonated with that question, and it gives me the opportunity to point up, I think, that we have to take each alien species individually, and exopolitics will eventually have to explore exopsychology, exobiology, all kinds of stuff, and so that we can intelligently interact with each individual alien species from wherever they're coming from. Does that, and I say generally, I think that they are benevolent because they wouldn't be in space and part of alien society, cosmic society, unless they were. But on the other hand, does that mean that we should not have some kind of defensive mechanisms in place in case some really nasties, you know, show up? I think it's only a practical thing.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, the telephone number is 623-444-5889. The toll-free number is in the USA and Canada, 888-223-4599. So you cannot, if you're in the USA and Canada, say, oh, I just can't call, I can't afford to call. If that's the case, I pay for the call, 888-223-4599. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, Kevin, this is Rusty from Michigan.
Hello, Rusty.
Hello.
Hi, Rusty. How are you?
Very good. Now, you keep mentioning Sitchin's work. What do you think, projected in the future, his work actually means we're going to be doing? I mean, you hinted at it a little bit, but do you think it's going to happen in the next 40 years, or, you know, this rise in consciousness?
I think that I think I can see roughly 50-year periodicities as far as the changes in us as a species, and that's a rough outside estimate. And in this, I think that this will be our in 100 years. You know, it will be our century of transformation to stellar society, and it will, and also to the expansion of human consciousness, and we'll see a new human, and with extended lifespans, maybe even immortality, and that sort of thing, and paranormal powers becoming more and more prevalent, and four-dimensional consciousness, and the critical thing that we will get from the Sitchin's work is the ability to break free from the Godspell kind of thing. So 50 years, maybe 50 years. We'll be pretty well on our way, I think.
Okay. Now, this thing of immortality, do you see that in Sitchin's work and, you know, other texts, that it actually means that they never died, or just doesn't mean that they lived a long time?
That's a great question. I've discussed that with Zechariah, and he has also said in lectures and in his writings that it was clear that the Anunnaki were not literally immortal, but they did have extremely long, relative to us anyway, extremely long lifespans, thousands and thousands of years. And some of them may, from 6,000 years ago, a piece of cake, to still be existing. And when we get to meet them, we'll see. And they also said themselves that they were affected by living on the Earth for a long period of time because it shortened their lifespans. What I'm talking about here is huge extended lifespans on our part because, I'll give you an example of myself. I'm a practicing immortal, to be a little bit facetious about it. I'm signed up for cryogenic suspension and with Alcor .org over in Phoenix, Arizona, put me on liquid nitrogen storage until they can get their act together and bring me back and put me in an age I like, and so on, because I think that that is only just a matter of simple human dignity. People say, well, what about the reincarnation? I think reincarnation is probably a fact, but I've had it with the diaper trip, man. I don't want to do that again. And the selection of the limited selection of good parents, that's another problem. But not to get too far off here. They lived, the Anunnaki lived thousands and thousands of years, and I think it will. It's inevitable, genetically and biologically, that we will do that same thing.
All right. We have a flash message from Patrick in Australia. And he says, good day, Kevin and Neil. If we were designed as a slave race, in your opinion, Neil, are we wasting our time when we pray to our creator or creators?
Say that last part about the creators again, please.
Well, if we were created as a slave race, are we wasting our time when we pray to the creator?
Okay, if he, let's see. Well, I was quoting Sitchin as saying that it is obvious that they created us genetically, but the Anunnaki would be our creators. They created us as a slave race. Eventually, we became partners with them, and now we are reaching, we're stepping out of racial and species adolescence into species independence. When we pray to the Creator, if we're talking about some God, then I think breaking the God spell eliminates that part. But this is not atheism, if that's what our friend is shooting at here. We have freedom to get out of the slave species status, but this is not atheism in the sense that it just resolves some very significant politics about who the monotheistic God of the Judeo-Christian and Muslim religions are. And they were two brothers who were fused together in one word. And so that kind of takes care of that.
Okay, but, so is there, in your view then, Neil, is there a God above the Anunnaki to whom they answer?
Well, that's what I was about to say, that this is not atheism, and by any means. It does not even address the question of whether there's some entity or whatever beyond an infinity who can create a zillion universes and play games with them on Wednesday afternoon. That should be the focus of that should continue to be the focus of human inquiry and search and contact, maybe. But that entity is not the God of the Judeo-Christian religions.
All right. So I want to get back to this conspiracy of even the denial of alien presence, the denial of alien reality. Caller, if you will, hang on just a moment. Let me get a very quick answer from you. Do you see that coming to an end? Is that conspiracy just about out of steam?
I'm sure it is, Kevin, because look at just within months, practically, Great Britain has released 8,500 pages of highly classified documentation about alien contact sightings and so on. Belgium, France, Brazil, China has very organized stuff around that. And I think that it it is already coming to an end, and I think that other countries making disclosure will force the United States to do it very soon.
Yeah, if they don't, Julian Assange me. Okay. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Hello, caller. Okay, well, shows is online, but we can't hear him. 623-444-5889 is the main number here in the studio. And you can also call us if you're in the USA or Canada. You can call us toll-free at 888-223-4599. If you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, we'd love to hear from you. You can call us, 623-444-5889. But we also have for you, since I don't have a toll-free number for you outside of the USA and Canada, you can use the flash message option on my website. Just go to my website, scroll down. You'll see the picture about tonight's show. On the right-hand side of that picture, you'll see a link that says flash message. Okay? So, Neil, if this conspiracy to deny alien presence is about to run out of steam, do you envision a disclosure in which they perhaps even present an extraterrestrial to us as this is an ambassador from whatever star system? Do you envision something like that? Caller, hang on. We'll get to you in just a moment.
I think that would be real frosting. I doubt that will happen, but your guess is as good as mine or probably better. You've been in the government, and so my concern is that that we have full disclosure. And when I say full disclosure, I mean not just generally about the alien presence, but also about our alien past, which is an integral part of it, and also about the 10th planet, because we need to be warned way ahead of time.
Okay. Fair enough. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Clay from Arkansas.
Hello, Clay.
Hello. I'm glad you're feeling better, too.
Thank you.
Okay. the plans that you mentioned, well, that's the same mountain that Noah's, they found pieces of Noah's Ark on. I wonder
I don't know what happened to your telephone, Clay, but we got nothing but static after you said Noah's Ark.
I'll hang up. Give me the answer, though.
We'll try. I'm not sure we understand the question. Did you understand it, Neil?
I understood Clay to say ask about something I mentioned about. I think he was talking about Mount Ararat, where they think that they, you know, they've located Noah's Ark after the flood, and probably when I was talking about the flood, that came to his mind. I may be pushing a lot of stuff on you, Clay, projecting a lot of stuff, but it does bring up an interesting point. There was two mountains that have been very, very important in the ancient records. One of them was Mount Ararat, which was used as a radius point, a center of a circle radius point.
All right, we have to step away for break. We'll pick up on Mount Ararat when we come back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, ladies and gentlemen. My guest this evening, Neil Freer. Neil, I want to give you a chance to wrap up what you were telling us about Mount Ararat.
If you read Sitchin's works, You see that he discovered that they used Mount Ararat as a center of a circle, a radius point in the center of a circle, and they drew arcs down through the Mesopotamian area, and then put radii through them, and the intersection points of those radii in the circles were where they laid out their original cities, and used them as used that whole V-shaped thing spread right on down through Mesopotamia as an incoming landing grid, and then shifted it over to Egypt after the flood. So Ararat was a key point in the Anunnaki history, but it also brings up a fascinating topic that I'm sure we don't have enough time to go into. But Mount Horeb in the Sinai was in 1900. Sir Flinders Petrie, one of the top Egyptologists at that particular point, discovered what he thought was a temple on top of Mount Horeb, and it turned out to be a chemical factory, and the chief manufacturing plant for monoatomic gold, which is single powder, single atom of gold, still gold but not metallic anymore. It's a white fluffy powder. And this is what the Anunnaki ingested and gave the bloodline kings to ingest for extended immortality, extended lifespan. And that there was no Mount Sinai in those times, even though that it is Horeb was called Sinai in the Old Testament. So those are the two mountains that came to mind, and highly recommend that anyone who's interested in following up read not only Sitchin's, all of Sitchin's work, but all of Sir Lawrence Gardner's work. Tremendous stuff.
And I also recommend that folks get a hold of a book called Sapiens Rising by this guy named Neil Freer. I think you're familiar with him. How can they get that book, Neil?
Well, I published it in ebook format. It's electronic, and it's available through Amazon.com, www.amazon.com. But it's in Kindle format only. Kindle is the electronic reader device, and you can download it on Kindle for in like a minute and a half, as you can with any of the other books. Kindle, by the way, is one sweet machine.
All right. Any plans for it to come out in other ebook formats?
Not at this particular point. I've considered, toyed with the idea of bringing it out for the, I think it's a Sony has an electronic reader now too, but it's as usual with the stuff that the far out, I guess, stuff that I write. It's a bit ahead of its time, and so I think I'll probably just leave it on Kindle with Amazon.com, and then see where it goes from there, because it may be appropriate to do it in paper, you know, one of these days too.
All right. And I've got the big question to ask, Neil. You ready? This is the big one.
Okay.
As a futurist, looking at where we are and looking at if we extend these trend lines forward, if without any change, you just extend the trend lines forward, we're not in a sustainable situation. So looking as a futurist, knowing where we are and looking forward to the future, do you see any actual hope that we're going to change directions?
I can say unqualifiedly that personally, subjectively, I do. I think that we are, that it is intrinsic in human nature to evolve, and that we are doing that. but we need to make it explicit. We need to take charge individually of our own personal evolution. We need to revamp the total political situations that have become outmoded. In Sapiens Rising, I have put out a concept for a universal voting situation by electronic means, 24/7, 365, called VOTON, V-O-T-O-N, and that could be run by artificial intelligence, because we have three major technologies that are of singular advantage. We have free energy. When we get them to release it, or Tom Bearden gets his stuff, and or Sturm, the Irish corporation that has an over-unity device, we get that on the road. We couple that with nanotechnology. The end product of nanotechnology is that you can, at the molecular level, you can transform anything into anything else, basically. And that eliminates recycling. It's greener than green. And the picture Picard on Star Trek saying to the machine, to the artificial intelligence machine, "I'll have a cup of Earl Grey, please," and comes out cup, saucer, tea, and everything just the way he wants it. He drinks it, he puts it back, and the entire thing gets recycled. And so then on the third major technology, of course, is artificial intelligence. And
okay, we're going to have to wrap up pretty quick because we're just about out of time.
Okay, you read Ray Kurzweil's book on the progression towards artificial intelligence that will be so smart by 2090 that it will be asking for benefits and insurance and civil rights. Put all those three together, and we have more than enough that will take us from competition to cooperation and stellar society.
All right. Neil Freer. Neil, I want to thank you for being with us this evening, and it's been a pleasure to have you back on the show. If you will, stay on the telephone line with me for just a moment as we bring this flight of the Kevin Smith Show in for a landing. Now, ladies and gentlemen, don't forget about the DVD, all right? Trust me on this. When you hear, you take tonight's show, you put it together with tomorrow night's show, you're going to say tomorrow night, if you haven't done this tonight, you're going to say, "I wish I had. I want that on DVD." But let me tell you, it's available tonight. Okay, it's available until we go on the air, actually, tomorrow. But it's not available during tomorrow's show or after. And that is for a gift of $15 to help this show, a donation of $15 to help this show continue, $15 or more, you'll get the DVD. And it'll have tonight's show and tomorrow night's show on it. For a donation of $50 or more, you get that DVD, plus I'll throw in God's in the Garden. You can't beat it. And these are just thank you gifts to say thank you for helping to support the show and keep us broadcasting, okay? We operate sort of like National Public Radio. Not the same agenda, but we operate pretty much that way. It is listener-supported, and that means that you don't hear me play commercials during the commercial breaks, okay? And that means I don't seek or have advertisers. We need you. It's tonight, $15 or more, and you'll get the DVD. My friends call me Steele. I, my enemies do too. You can call me whatever you'd like to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.